Throughout the pandemic, Governor Andrew Cuomo has taken a variety of broad and aggressive actions to combat the spread of COVID-19. Many of these actions have faced legal pushback, with the courts largely upholding the governor's policies, essentially deferring to his authority to protect the health of New Yorkers during our state of emergency. But this month, Cuomo has been rebuked twice by the legal system for enacting restrictions that judges found to be, for lack of a better description, irrational. To break down these rulings, we're joined by the Capitol Press Room's lawyer in residence, Rob Rosbrough, author of the New York Appeals blog and a litigation partner with Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. Welcome back to the show, Rob.
Thanks for having me again, David. I appreciate it.
So, Rob, I want to start with the case dealing with the closure of a laser tag center by state and county officials, which was deemed to be a precaution that was, quote unquote, devoid of logic, according to a state Supreme Court judge in Western New York. Can you explain what happened there?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So the Lasertron business is a laser tag business and has been classified as similar to, you know, your typical outdoor paintball game where, you know, people run around with laser guns and try to shoot each other for fun. It happens indoors, though, so it's a little bit different in these kind of circumstances. But what happened here was there were inspections. You know, Lasertron, upon the onset of the pandemic, changed its business. It was only allowing half the number of people it normally would allow. It put in air filtration systems inside its laser tag facility, which are generally very large, encourage people to stay away from each other, which is typically the purpose of a laser tag game anyway, and put in all sorts of precautions to ensure that its patrons would be safe. And the Erie County Department of Health did an inspection and said that they were complying with all of the requirements that were required under the guidance. But then abruptly, about a month later, they changed their stance and reclassified the business to more along the lines of an amusement park, which under the state guidelines are supposed to be closed now. So the state then said, well, this business should be closed, and Lasertron challenged that determination. And the judge really took a review of all of the facts and the responses the state had put in why it took this action and found no logic in it. It said, you know, all of the state's responses were fairly academic and explained the, you know, what the state has done on a general level, but didn't give any basis for why Lasertron in particular should be shut down when there was a particular inspection report from the Erie County Department of Health that said everything was going well and they were being safe.
So what's next for this case? I mean, can I go ahead and plan my 34th birthday at Lasertron, or should I put the hold on sending out invitations for right now?
You can for right now. They have a preliminary injunction in place that allows them to continue to operate with the same health and safety protocols that they had before. And the court's going to hear arguments on a more permanent injunction application relatively soon to try to put a final resolution on the way it needs to be handled. So if you want to go play laser tag, go right ahead.
Good to know. Subsequently, there was a similar themed ruling from a Western New York judge, and you know, I don't know, maybe there's something in the water out there, where he took issue with the use of targeted COVID-19 restrictions, in this case, an orange zone in Erie County. The restrictions back in November had resulted in the closure of indoor dining, but it was subsequently challenged by 91 restaurants. What did the judge there think about the measures implemented by the governor?
So the judge took actually no issue with the measures implemented by the governor. Mm-hmm. What he took issue with was the fact that they weren't actually being applied. So the judge's particular holdings were that, you know, Erie County far exceeds the rolling 7-day average for what would qualify them for an orange or even a red zone, but it hasn't fallen within, you know, none of those restrictions were actually being applied in a way that the governor said that they would. So the closure of these restaurants, the judge said, was arbitrary because there was data sufficient, to support a designation, but the state didn't actually rely on any of the data when they made this determination. They made the determinations back in November when the data wasn't there to justify the classification. Things have changed now, and maybe it would be a little bit different had the designations been made when there was data to support it. But again, in that case, the judge found that the data just wasn't applied in the way the governor said that it should be. So he found that the decision to close the restaurants for indoor dining made no sense when it was actually done.
And that issue of making no sense, to me, that's what I see as the through line between these two rulings. And, again, I don't have that law school experience. I never took the bar exam. I don't practice law. But to me, it seems like these two cases, and at least the rulings, have a similar viewpoint from the judges. What do you think about that argument? Is there a sense of commonality between these two rulings?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that, the judges, under the deferential standard we've been talking about since we first started talking about, the judicial review of the governor's actions, the judges aren't taking issue with, deferring to the governor and to the state health orders when there is, a showing that the data supports it and that the decisions that are being made will actually help in combating the pandemic. But what these judges are taking issue with is when the governor and the health departments, whether it's a county health department or a state health department, are taking actions that just don't seem to further those legitimate goals. So if that's the case, there's no reason that courts can't enforce the personal rights of the businesses and individuals involved. And even, one of the judges even went so far as to cite Justice Gorsuch's concurrence in the Brooklyn Diocese case that says, Jacobson says deference, but deference doesn't mean deference in all situations. Deference means when there is actual basis, a rational basis for a restriction, will uphold it. But that wasn't the case in these two particular instances here.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're getting some free legal advice from our pro bono attorney, Rob Rosbro, author of the New York Appeals Blog and a litigation partner with Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. When I think about these rulings, though, are these examples of, I guess, judges looking at a different test than what judges earlier in the pandemic were considering when they, upheld the governor's rulings and were much more deferential? Or is this the same sort of test, but at a different time, and therefore, judges, like anyone else, maybe are looking at this situation from a different viewpoint? How do you, make sense of these rulings?
I think they're applying the same test as they were in the beginning. I think the difference is, as we've gone along, living in the pandemic, judges, as well as everyone, are getting more willing to actually scrutinize the government's decisions and see if there is something to support them. For example, in the Lasertron situation, there was an Erie County Health Department inspector who inspected the facility and said it was safe. The judge couldn't get over that, because there was no actual particular circumstances that had changed. And the same thing for the restaurant. When the orange zone designation was made, there was no data to support it under the governor's own standards. So that was the problem. I think that the judges are applying the same test, but when they're finding that the state is making sweeping characterizations that every single action needs to be taken to ensure that we're all safe, they're scrutinizing what that actually means and whether there is actually data to support it, rather than just throwing up their hands and saying, this is the beginning of the pandemic, we're all a little afraid, we should have let the government take care of it. So the additional judicial scrutiny that is being undertaken, I think, is why we're seeing a few different decisions than what we saw, back in March, April, and May.
So we've been talking about COVID-19 related lawsuits, but New York is also facing a federal case in response to the 2019 passage of the Reproductive Health Act, a law that was billed as a codification of the principles of Roe v. Wade. Can you walk us through some of the key complaints of this challenge to the law?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So the complaint is a class action on a number of different classes that the plaintiffs have proposed. The first is, women, class action of women who either want to have an abortion or want to preserve the right to have an abortion. And I think that class is a very understandable one to challenge the particular restrictions of this law. What is interesting is that the plaintiffs have also pled a class of unborn but viable fetus, which means the way New York law has developed in this area was a law in 1970 was adopted to say that any fetus before 24 weeks is not considered viable and thus isn't considered a person under the law that can exercise constitutional rights. The law has now changed under the Reproductive Health Act to say that is not just 24 weeks, it's any time pre-birth. And that's what the New York legislature adopted. The 1970 amendment was challenged through the New York Court of Appeals on both state and federal constitutional grounds, and the Court of Appeals upheld the constitutionality of the restriction to 24 weeks. So what this new class action does is challenge the portion of the Court of Appeals decision that wasn't decided. Is there a, with the advance of medical science, some time when a fetus is determined viable, which it should then be afforded constitutional rights? And that's what it seems that this litigation is intended to challenge in the context of New York's new Reproductive Health Act.
When you think about this case, do you imagine this is a Hail Mary effort to undo the law, or is this a much more realistic play that has a better chance of potentially overturning the Reproductive Health Act?
It's hard to say. So some of the claims are a little, they're going to be hard to succeed on. For example, the class of women are alleging that their right to redress the government under the First Amendment has been violated by the change to the penal law that it says you can't have a murder conviction of an unborn child. That seems to be a stretch on first blush. It will require a significant development of the case law to do that. But what I do think is will be very interesting is how the federal courts handle the claims by a class of unborn but viable children. That will certainly be an interesting one to view, and I don't think that it's a one that can be disposed of easily or one that can be disposed of quickly. I think you'll see probably a decision at the district court, which then gets appealed to the Second Circuit with the eye that this is tailored to end up at the Supreme Court at some point.
Well, that'll be something to watch for. Well, we've been speaking with Rob Rosborough. He is the inspiration for the fictional character Perry Mason and author of the New York Appeals blog and a litigation partner with Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. Rob, thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks again for having me, David. I appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.